It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Then, is your mic in the right place? I think I messed with it earlier.
There aren't too many other places for it to go.
No, not microphone. That guy named Mike over there.
Oh.
Is he in the right place?
You mean the guy that does our sign language?
No, that's Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh!
Don't you remember?
But Samuel L. Jackson's not here. What's Mike doing here? Is he filling in for Sam?
I don't think that's sign language.
Oh. Well, he was over there gesturing, so I just thought, and Sam's not here. He must be working on some project.
We might need to call a medical professional. Anyway, hello. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world where the carpet matches the drapes.
That is true, although people can't see.
No.
I mean,
but I happen to know every other podcast in the world. Not true.
We're right here next to the windows.
Yes.
There are. I can see the curtains. Hi, just Izzy. Fine. And there's the carpet, and yeah.
Izzy, are you here to record color. Some podcastery? I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 173.
And for us, it's been 2 weeks. Because, see, we're getting really cocky about this now. I just had a really, really shitty day, is why we didn't do it last time.
Yeah, you was just feeling a little grumpy.
Yep. So we had our alternate universe boys jump in. Apparently, it was a very popular episode. There was a lot of commentary and stuff like that going on, so I probably should have listened to it.
I listened to it. Now I don't remember, though.
See, so we're in the same boat, except you had to put forth an effort.
Was that the naming shaman thing?
People really like the naming shaman.
Yeah, I thought, as usual, alternate universe William sounded like he was hepped up on goofballs. Not as much as
that's
in previous episodes,
evil
but
tends to sound like.
I guess.
For those of you who have never heard us before, let me give you a quick rundown. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Once again, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People like yourselves and other cooler people write into this email address with questions, comments, topics, things like that. The hat, of its own accord, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat. We draw them out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, repeat for about an hour. That's the whole show.
Random, unedited, unrehearsed. I mean, literally, I walk in the door, Tony asks me if I'm ready, and
yep.
He presses record.
This time, you walked in the door at 5:59, we started recording at 6:00.
I mean, I don't even know what he's going to say, like, about the only podcast, all that stuff. I have no clue what's going to come out
and
of his mouth.
Half the time, I don't know what I'm going to say.
So, yeah, I mean, it's... The podcast would probably be so much better if we talked about it ahead of time or shared some notes, but we don't.
Nope.
It's totally cold and off the cuff. And so just be prepared for that, you know, and how
awesome it is.
Not so awesome. Actually.
No, in the real awesome sense, sort of Lovecraftian awesome. Like, you look at it and your mind cannot encompass it and you go mad.
Yep.
The lucky ones die. So how was your 2 weeks, William?
You know, I have a lot I could talk about, but I'm reluctant to because you always have a lot to talk about, and I just feel like you feel cheated if I talk too much at the front end of the...
I also feel cheated if you talk too little.
Oh, I just can't win.
You never have a lot, so what is...
No, that's not true.
I'm impressed.
I've been...
No, you take a little and stretch it out for 20 minutes, but very seldom do you actually come
it
in starting
with a
lot.
Seems like a lot to me. I don't just stretch
no,
it out.
You usually are like, nothing happened, and then you talk for 20 minutes. This time you're actually saying, I have a lot to talk about. You never say that up front.
Well, okay, a couple things then. First of all, I'm continuing to watch like Warner Brothers animated stuff
yes.
that I didn't watch in the 90s, and I still don't know why I didn't do that, but... Well, I didn't have a TV, for one, but I've had Netflix for a long time, so I could have easily, in the last, what, 10 years maybe, rented this stuff and watched it.
So are you on to Crypto the Superdog yet?
No. So I'm watching this stuff, and I'm enjoying it. One of the things we watched was the Green Lantern animated series, which I think I mentioned this before, obviously made for a certain demographic, you know, young male audience, which... Let me make clear, I'm not saying there's anything wrong in principle with making a show for a particular demographic, much less a male demographic. What I have a problem with is that seems to be, there seems to be a lot of those and not very many that ignore gender, you know, in terms of its demographic target or that are targeted toward a female demographic, it seems. But
females don't buy things ever.
But given... You know, given what it was, I thought it was very good, but you know, it was had a very limited run, and my understanding is it was canceled because the live action Green Lantern movie didn't sell enough toys.
Well, I have theories about that.
Well, I do too, and that's one of the things I wanted to.
I'll take it back. I have one theory. Didn't sell enough toys because it sucked.
Well, right, but the interesting thing here is it. It made me also think about that Justice League show that everyone talks about, how it had a fairly...
Wait, you mean Young Justice?
Like Teen Titans type of thing that ended up having a significant female following that was unexpected, apparently.
Yes,
by
and
the
got
people.
It canceled.
And it got canceled. And it
because
made me,
of that, specifically.
Well, it occurred to me that... You know, that baffled me, of course, because we talked about it, and I thought, that just doesn't make any sense. If you're making a cartoon, you promise, all right, we're gonna have an audience this size, and this many of them are going to, I don't know, buy the toys, let's just say, or buy the products that the advertisers are selling. If you meet that number of people who are watching the show, and you meet that percentage of people that are buying the toys, you'd think everybody would be happy. But I realize, no, that is not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because they're stupid or that they don't realize, as you just pointed out, that girls buy things. It's because, okay, imagine for a moment you have a product and try to imagine that it has no gender built, you know, like this is going to be for a boy or a girl or man or woman. It's hard to imagine that because so many of them, you know, people take all products and they turn them into a gender thing, it seems like. But imagine that for a second, and imagine that it's being marketed to 1,000 people, okay? And half of them are women, and half of them are, well, let's say
I'm
boys.
Imagining.
Let's say boys and girls, okay? Now, and that's it's going to have a certain price, and it's going to make a certain amount of money depending on who buys it. Now, imagine that they take this product and say, hey, let's make a version that's for boys, and a version that's for girls, and we're not going to have anything in between. It's either for boys or for girls. Now, at first, if you have any intuition about economics, you're going to think this is a dumb idea. Because to produce two of the thing, one for boys and one for girls, you're kind of incurring a little extra expense to figure out how to do that and to package them differently. But then you have two products, but for each product, your target group is halved. So you're increasing your expense to produce the thing, but you're trying to get a smaller group of people to buy it, which means you're going to have to lower the price. So it seems like the net result is that
you
make
you
less.
You have to raise the price? If it's costing you more to make, aren't you going to have to raise the price?
Except the demand goes down.
Mm.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? But the thing, though, is with that is actually, in the real world, if you kind of just look around, and I'm sure there's research that shows this, you actually are able, once you've turned these two objects into gendered objects, you can actually charge more for them. In some cases, you can charge significantly more for the product that's for girls. I mean, this works actually in, like, say, deodorant. If you make deodorant, you can make the exact same deodorant, exact same thing. Make one of them that's packaged for women and one that's packaged for men, and you can sell them and you can charge more.
Because they think it's a specialty product.
Not just, well, that, but even if they don't think that, they're going to be in separate parts of the store, so it's not like you're going to, you know, the women's section is going to be separate from the men's section, or even there's going to be, even if they're in the same deodorant section, the women's deodorants are going to be not right next to the men's deodorant, so there might not be a way to compare. So my point is, out in the market, out in the world, you can make more money by taking any product and turning it into, well, this one's for men and this one's for women.
You heard it here first, people. Gender all of your products and you'll make more money.
Now, if of course, there are some situations where it doesn't work. You remember where they made the Bic pens for women or something?
I do not.
Okay, not long ago, I think it was Bic, they made these pens especially for women. Like they were pink and purple, and there was something about how they were better on the hands or something. I mean, it was totally ridiculous.
I do remember when they made chips and chocolate for women.
Now, these were pens. Like, Ellen DeGeneres made fun of them on her show and everything. Now, people see something like that, and they just think it's just absurd, and marketing people are stupid and everything like that. But what they don't realize is that the people who came up with that idea and or approved it, they see ideas like this all the time. Like the deodorant thing. Someone comes to them and says, we don't even have to make a separate deodorant for women. All we have to do is put it in a different package and we'll make more money. They say, okay, do that, and it does make more money. I mean, they do it all the time. So to them, this pen idea just seemed like another thing just like that. And that's how it happened. It wasn't because you're dealing with really stupid, out-of-touch people. It's because, you know, they were on a roll. They do this with all kinds of products, so might as well try it with this one and see what happens. And, of course, it was ridiculous. But in a way, it's always ridiculous.
So do we need to make the podcast episodes for men and podcast episodes for women so we can charge them more?
Well, I'm just saying, I think there's a real thing out there where that's true. You will make more money if you do that.
All right, then.
So it's like there's a gender binary industrial complex.
Sound economic decisions, then. Keep it up.
Well, I hadn't really thought about it like this before. It just seemed like people were being dumb with the whole Young Justice thing or whatever it was. It's like, well, they're just not thinking this through. But no, they are thinking it through, because if in this Young Justice thing, let's say they get, the thing is, what DC or whoever made the Young Justice thing, what they promised wasn't, hey, we'll give you 1 million viewers and 30% of them will buy your toys. They promised them 1 million male viewers and 30% will buy your toys. If you have any females in there, that's a problem. Why? Because those girls, whatever money they're spending on the boys' toys, they're not spending on the girls' toys. And that means less money in the long run. It's got to be boys buying boys' toys and girls buying girls' toys if you're going to make the maximum amount of money. Because, you know, at first it just seems like it doesn't matter who's buying the toys, right? I mean, you get this many viewers and they buy this many toys. But no, the gender matters, because if it's the wrong gender, then you're not making as much money. So, it you know, I mean, think about all the things that are gendered in our culture. Like, the most popular literary genre is the romance genre, which is all about strictly defining the genders in a binary way. And, you know, women like this and men like this and women do this and men do that. The gender binary is big money. And if you make something that you're targeting to a specific gender and it's successful in terms of raw numbers, but not in terms of the gender you're targeting, then of course it's going to be seen as a failure. Because anywhere it crosses over, you're not making money there. You're losing it, because the money that wrong gender is spending on this thing, they're not spending on the other thing.
Well, that's bleak as all fuck. I'm kind of scared now because we're 15 minutes in. You've depressed the shit out of me. And you said you had a lot of things to talk about. And so far you've covered one.
Well, there wasn't.
So what's the other? You found out that grinding up orphans is actually good for society?
No. I was going to talk about Batman because, kind of in relation to all this.
I was just a little boy.
Oh, sorry, because
I heard "Bad Man," not "Bad Man."
I've been listening to "Fat Man on Batman," which is Kevin Smith's podcast about Batman. It's actually really good, and there's a guy he talks to on there sometimes named Ralph Garman. No, gosh, no, I don't remember his name.
Ralph Macchio.
I don't remember his name. But
Ralph Cramden.
I've heard a couple things that he's been in, like they did a review of Man of Steel and of Dark Knight Rises and stuff. And this guy is basically everything he says about these films and comic books in general and Batman and Superman characters specifically, I totally agree with. It's like, I can't believe this guy, because... You know, I guess I haven't heard a lot of people...
Nobody agrees with you, normally.
Well, yeah, that's. I guess that's right. That's what it comes down to.
So this guy's your soulmate.
Wow. No, I mean, I shouldn't say I agree with everything he says. Of course I don't. But there's so much that I've said in, like, in the podcast I did with my brother, and we'll pick that up sometime here in the next couple months, screenshots. A lot of the points we made, you know, were some of the same points he made. And I hadn't really heard anyone else making those same kinds of points.
So... Do you want to do, is this some partner swapping, some podcast singing?
No,
it's me just... and Kevin Smith and you and the Garmin GPS locator? Or
no, I just Macchio. Thought, it's just something that, you know, you talk about.
I think you and Ralph Macchio would make a really good podcast.
You talk about movies you've seen or podcasts you listen to. Well, this is one I started listening to and I actually really like it. Because there are a lot of like you've sent podcasts I've listened to and they're all right, but I don't.
It's not just Scott Mosier, is it?
No.
Okay.
You've sent podcasts my way that I listen to, and they're all right, but they don't really, you know, they're not something I'm going to listen to regularly. And my brother Scott has sent me, like, John Hodgman has his Judge John Hodgman podcast, which is very funny, but also not something I'm going to go out of my way to listen to a lot. But I cannot stop listening to this podcast because, and it's not just because of those two, because they're not always together on it. Even when it's Kevin by himself or him with some other guest, like Scott is on there sometimes, it's really interesting. And so I'm having a lot of fun listening to that stuff, and I'm, you know, because, you know, I'm kind of getting a notion of what kind of Batman stories I like. You know, everyone's got a different way of a kind of Batman story that they like, and they like some of the stories and they don't like other stories. And you know, I never really thought about it before. I just sometimes I like them and sometimes I don't. But as you're watching, like, Justice League animated stuff, and you're looking at comic books, and then you start realizing remembering, well, yeah, there's a Golden Age and a Silver Age and a Bronze Age, you know, these arbitrary things that people make, but it's still kind of interesting to think, well, where do I fall into all this, if anywhere? And, you know, it's kind of cool to figure out that out and say, okay, so if this is the kind of Batman I like, is there, like, a certain author that writes this mostly, or a certain... You know, can I actually go to the comic book store and I'll know exactly what years I want to look at and what authors or whatever? Because I never really thought about it like that before. Mm. It, to me, comic book stories were just, you know, a new writer and a new artist, and it changed, and there wasn't really any pattern to it. Mm. But if there is kind of a pattern both to what I like and to what's actually published, you know, maybe I can pick up some old comic books that I'd really like or whatever. So it's been kind of fun thinking about that and listening to, you know, Kevin Smith and a few other people talk about it and give me a better idea of, well, what kinds of stuff would I go buy at the comic book store and what era and what authors. So that's been kind of fun to think about like that, because I just never really have. And I've been enjoying the animated stuff, and pretty soon we're going to start Batman the Animated Series, and I'm kind of excited about that because I think I'm really going to like it. And we're watching Batman Beyond. It's okay. Really? Did you ever watch that?
I watched parts of the series. I remember watching it in the very beginning. Like, when it came out, I was at the right age that I started watching it. But I don't think I watched it regularly. And then Return of the Joker is the part I remember really.
It's very good. That, I mean, I've seen that movie, and it's very good. And we're also playing Arkham City.
Okay. I haven't really touched Arkham Asylum since I came back.
Well, we skipped right over that because, I mean, we tried the demo, we didn't like it, and I went ahead and just read up on the story because I was like, well, is there anything about this story I'm going to like? No. I've never seen anything about Arkham Asylum that I've ever liked. I don't like the way Batman looks. Nothing. But Arkham City is a more open environment. That part's cool. I'm sure Batman looks exactly the same, but somehow he doesn't seem like he looks as bad. Maybe because...
Are you keeping track of how many of the random residents of Arkham City call women bitches?
Oh, man.
I've heard that's quite prevalent.
Well, if a female character is referenced at all by, like you say, while you're going through the city, you hear inmates saying things. And it's going to be Catwoman and Poison Ivy, basically. They're all being called terrible names. There's always the suggestion that they should be captured and raped. I mean, it's pretty bad. But on the other side of it, the taunting of Batman...
They talk like that about Robin also.
No, the taunting of Batman is kind of gendered. You know, there's, you know, you chicken, you know, come down here and fight and stuff. I mean, you know, so they're... A lot of the criticisms people have about, you know, manhood and how men are expected to fall within particular roles, that's played upon also. And it to the point where it's almost out of... It doesn't fit the story because Batman is supposed to be intimidating. You know, these inmates shouldn't be taunting Batman to come fight them, especially when many of them don't have guns or anything. It just doesn't make sense that the people in there would not be afraid of him or not want to avoid him. You know, it kind of defies or defies, I suppose, the
they finally figured out that he's a depressive sociopath who dresses up in a furry outfit.
Well, the thing about that, though, too, is...
I was only a boy!
That's one of the things, you know, in Batman stories I like, he's still kind of... He scares people, you know what I'm saying? And he's still kind of a mystery as to what he is and who he is to criminals and to the police. They haven't quite figured out that he's a guy who doesn't kill or whatever. I mean, that takes a huge part of his character away. The whole point of him dressing up as a bat is because criminals are a superstitious and cowardly lot, you know. And he's supposed to have these great sort of ninja abilities, so he should be able to do a lot of things without anyone getting a really good look at him. And he exists in a world where there's metahumans and aliens and magic and stuff, so they could very easily think that he's not even human. I mean, that's a perfectly good possibility in the DC universe. So I like the Batman that's kind of a myth and an urban legend. You don't get that very often anywhere, but that I prefer that. So him running around in Arkham City and people just treating him like he's just some other guy, and in every way, not just in taunting him, but in not feeling threatened or by him or whatever, it doesn't ring true to the essence of the story as far as I'm concerned, but it's still been pretty fun to play it because, like I say, it's an open environment. There's a lot of cool things to do. You get to play, we've got the Game of the Year edition, so all the DLC stuff's in it, so you get to play Catwoman, some of the Riddler puzzles and stuff in it are fun, so it's been enjoyable, and we don't regret just skipping over Asylum because there was just nothing about it that we were interested in.
Pete Holmes went on record one time as saying that he liked the Arkham games, but his favorite Batman games were the Assassin's Creed games. He says, those are where I feel like Batman.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And in the Arkham games, I just feel like a dude who punches a lot. Like, in Assassin's Creed, I feel like Batman.
Well, I really look forward to Origin, but we didn't get that one. We were just going to go right to that one, actually, because it seemed like it was a cooler game all the way around.
It's gotten the worst reviews of all three.
Really?
By quite a large margin.
Hmm.
Pretty much, you're the first person I know who had a really distinct opinion between Arkham City and Arkham Asylum. everybody else I know considers Arkham City just an a continuation of all the awesome stuff from Arkham Asylum. And then Origins was another company, and people say they didn't do it as well.
Oh, that's true. It was another company. Well, we were going to go right for Origins, but we were going to wait until it had like a Game of the Year, like all the DLCs or something on it. And that, you know, that's actually not going to be too far away, my understanding is. But, I mean, the story in Arkham Asylum just didn't appeal. And the more I learned about it, the less I was interested in it. All the screenshots I ever saw of it, I didn't like. And again, I don't like the way Batman looks. I don't really like the way he looks in Arkham City either. But when he's out in an open environment, you don't notice as much as when he's like in a little room or whatever. He just doesn't look like if he was out of the costume, he'd look like what Bruce Wayne should look like. And in fact, at the beginning of Arkham City, he's Bruce Wayne, and he's talking about how Arkham City's bad and they shouldn't, you know, and then he gets thrown in there. Bruce Wayne does. And as Bruce Wayne, he doesn't look like Bruce Wayne should, I mean.
He looks like Michael Keaton.
No, he just looks, you just think of Bruce Wayne as looking normal, not with a thick neck and, you know, huge arms and, you know what I'm saying? That just doesn't look like what, you know, the whole billionaire playboy thing would go over very well. I mean, that's one thing about the Nolan films, which was cool, was, you know, Christian Bale looked like what Bruce Wayne might look like, you know, both in the uniform and out of the uniform. He just looked like a normal guy. And when you get into a video game and they turn him into this, I don't know, this person that doesn't look like a normal person. I just don't like that. I don't like it in the comic books when he's drawn like that either. But whatever. But it's been fun to watch, and we look forward to Origins. Maybe whatever other people didn't like about it, we won't mind. Because sometimes it's just a matter
of... Given how focused you are on how Batman looks, I'm going to guess that your general things you look for in a video game are probably different.
Well, story, but to me, the visuals are part of the story, so, yeah. And especially for a comic book character. I mean, we've talked about this before. If I'm reading a comic book, even if I think the writing is good, if the art is bad, I just can't even deal with it. I gotta put it down, I'm done. So that's just how it is. But
anyway. All right, so that's two things.
Yeah, that's really it.
Okay. We're heading towards a half hour, so...
See what I mean?
Well, here's the deal. You are incapable of talking about what you've been up to in a few minutes' time.
Yes.
You have two options. You take a half hour, or you don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And as long as those are our two options, we're going to go with you taking a half hour. Because I want to hear about it, and the listeners want to hear about it. Now, we all would be happier if you could, for example, just talk about how you didn't like the look of Batman for maybe 30 seconds instead of 5 minutes.
Yes, yes.
But we vastly prefer that to you just not talking about what you've been to. So you got to train. Practice in front of the mirror. But in the meantime, this is what we got. Because we love you. And we want to know what you've been doing for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Let me see. You saw two pilots of TV shows. Not watching either of them. Saw the pilot for Dominion on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Mm.
Hated it.
Don't know anything about it.
Really like. It's a TV series based on the apocalyptic horror movie that nobody watched called Legion.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that.
Yeah. Terrible. Really bad. Don't watch it. Looks awful. The producer's words were, "You could not pay me enough to keep watching this." Also saw the pilot to The Musketeers on BBC. Not going to watch it. The producer's sticking with it for at least a moment. But it's... So apparently Britain just caught on to the stuff we did in the 90s with like Hercules and Xena and stuff.
Okay.
So they're making shows like Merlin and Robin Hood and Atlantis. These weird sort of action... mythology-esque shows, and they're doing one about the Musketeers now, and it looks just like all the others, so it's not horrible, but I just don't care.
Yeah, right.
So I'm not gonna watch it. We finished Fargo, the series. We had a lot of feelings about it. Very little of which I can say because it would spoil things. Some things we didn't like and some things we did. The fact that it has caused as much conversation as it has between myself, the producer, and the producer's sister, I think speaks well to it. It has that vibe like American Horror Story. They've basically wrapped up things, and I think if they get a second season, it's going to be a different sort of time period in that area. And in fact, they sort of set it up. They kept making reference to stuff that happened in 79, and I'm like, I think that's what it'll be. Which makes sense, because you can't get Billy Bob Thornton and Martin Freeman and Colin Hanks to just hang out for your TV show for however long it's popular. So I think that's the plan, but I liked it. We all sort of agreed that the movie was better, and that some of that may have been for the kind of story you're telling, it works better as a movie than a TV show. Because they tell similar kinds of stories. I mentioned before when I saw How to Train Your Dragon 2 that from that I had discovered a song and discovered a particular artist.
Yeah.
I've been listening the hell out of that album. I really love it. It's by a gentleman named Jonesy, J-O-N-S-I. His solo album is called Go, G-O. And I really like it. It's sort of music that I've been waiting for, sort of since I was younger. I feel that it ties in to a lot of musical choices I got, especially in sort of pop music. When I was younger, both in terms of popular music via mostly my sister and also the soundtracks to various movies I saw when I was younger. But I really, really like it. We didn't game this week because somebody had a conflict. I have now completed the audiobook of the newest Dresden Files, Skin Game. As usual, very surprising, all sorts of cool stuff. James Marsters reads them wonderfully. I've also started reading the books to the producer, finally. We are about 60% through the first one. She seems to be enjoying it. I'm enjoying reading it to her. I feel like I'm doing a much better job reading it to her because I've listened to the audiobooks. I hear him in my head, and I sound more like him, and I feel like I do it better. I don't know that that's true. I, however, am stuck in that I have liked the Dresden Files. I have read all of the Dresden Files, or rather listened to them. As the series goes on, I like the original books less and less. In particular, the first three I'm not that into. And it takes time to introduce characters that you will eventually come to care about and things will happen to them. And some of them don't even show up until, you know, book four or five or whatever. So I'm really like, we gotta go faster. I want you to know about so-and-so. And we haven't even got there yet. Yeah. Right now she's particularly enamored of Toot Toot. And actually particularly enamored of Morgan because she just thinks he's hilarious. Because he keeps having the knack of showing up just after bad things have happened, so he doesn't actually have any proof, and he just assumes things. But he just has the worst comedic timing ever. He just walks in just too late to actually see what happened. She doesn't seem super into Bob yet, but, you know, it'll take some time. Yeah, and I think that's it. That's pretty much been my 2 weeks. Or at least anything I can talk about on the podcast.
Okay.
All right, so hat things.
Yep. Time for the hat.
Also, go to YouTube, to our channel, The Magical Talking Hat, and see videos there. There's a new video showing up today, I'm sure.
Yep. By the time you're listening to this...
Which, a coworker asked how we liked the Yeti.
Oh, well, I like it. I think it's great.
He apparently has one and has not found it particularly good. I thought the audio seemed good from the videos, except for the fact that I'm too far from the mic.
He doesn't like it?
He apparently does not.
I've had nothing but good experiences.
Also, what webcam did we use?
I don't remember. The thing about that is, and I said this on the blog, we did our 100th episode in that same room.
Yes, we did.
And a guy from the newspaper filmed it, and it looked fine.
Yes.
So there was no reason for us to think there was going to be a lighting problem.
No.
I've used that camera for other video productions. I mean, Jazz can attest to this. You can't find them anymore. They're not really up online anymore. But she can tell you when I did a parody of Lost and stuff, it worked great even in a low-light situation. So, yes, before we filmed, we did notice on the little monitor that the light was low and it wasn't going to...
But it didn't look as bad to me.
Well, no, but also we just decided, what the heck, let's just do it.
Yeah, and I don't think it mattered. Next time we'll bring a lamp.
Yeah.
But.
Well, the thing is, you know, the thing that bothers me about it is, you know, I've done some filmmaking, and there's never been a time where there was something wrong with the end product of the film that I didn't know before I even started would be wrong with it. Like, I knew I was using aftermarket cameras and the video quality wouldn't be very good. The audio on the first film we did, Inquire Within, wasn't very good, but that's because I didn't have time to get audio equipment because we were filming that for a film festival kind of thing. Later, I was able, you know, audio equipment you can get relatively cheaply, a lot more cheap than you can get a nice new camera. So the next couple films I did still didn't look like that great, although the lighting was better because we were able to get some more lighting solutions, and the sound was better because I was able to buy some sound equipment. But whatever's ever been wrong with any of the films, it didn't happen because of, you know, incompetence. It was because I just didn't have what I needed to make it look super great, and that's fine. I mean, to me, the important thing was to do it. But I think sometimes people look at some of the stuff that I've done, or maybe these videos, and think these guys don't know how to make videos. But it's not that we don't know how.
You're half right. I have no idea how to make videos.
Well, there was no reason for us to think that there would be a lighting or a camera problem. And then we did see right away that there was going to be one, but why not just go ahead and film it anyway?
That is an interesting side effect of these YouTube videos. If you watch it, you'll die within 7 days. So that might be related to the lighting issues.
But I mean, and I am sorry that it doesn't, you know, look very good or whatever, but I, you know, it's always a hard choice to make because on one hand, you want to get the thing out there so people can see it, and when it comes right down to it, like you said, does it really matter if it doesn't look that great? But you also don't want people to judge you unfairly based on the quality of this thing and let the poor quality of it completely distract from everything else.
Yeah, it was a way harder choice for you.
Yeah, well,
I was fine. You sent me all the freaking out emails all the time with the updates and... Oh, it's just about good. No, oh no, it's terrible. I'm gonna start over. No, wait, maybe I'm not gonna start over. Oh, well, I hope it's okay. I'm like, dude, it's just.
Well, it's just, you know, I don't know.
We don't put that much effort into this show. Why should we do it when people can see us?
Well, that's.
I wore pants. That's as far as.
It's the way I am with my stuff. I mean, you know, the films that I've done, I'm proud of them. I think they're really good. And again, whatever was wrong with.
You don't consider the podcast your stuff, but the videos are your
stuff. The stuff that I've done, like that I was like
I know,
the main
but
guy.
I'm saying you don't worry about the production quality of this.
No, I do.
But you worried about the production.
You
quality
know
of
I do. My gosh, I
not
listen.
Like that I don't get weird emails all the time.
Because I tell you right while I'm here.
Not like you were freaking out about that, though.
That's because it seemed like it was more on me. I mean, you know, I can just sit here and let you talk, and it makes the podcast 100% better, but...
All right, I'll produce the next videos.
No, you won't.
I have no idea how. I'll fake
it. But the point is, you know, I've done video stuff, and I'm very proud of it, and whatever's wrong with it, I knew it was going to be wrong with it at the outset, but the choice was, well, either don't do it, because it's not going to be absolutely perfect, or do it and live with it. And of course, I always think it's better just to do it. But then people might not understand that I know that it doesn't look or sound perfect. And so then they just don't like it based on that. And that doesn't seem fair to me. But whatever.
Always remember the words of Jesse Hyatt.
Okay. Blood Sparrow says, dudes. Just dudes. Not hat dudes.
Whoa.
Just dudes. When playing RPG-esque games... Like, things that are like RPGs,
yes.
Not necessarily RPGs, but
yes.
Like them,
yes.
On PC or console, and there's crafting.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And let's see, parenthetically, survival and Fallout, New Vegas, cooking and Skyrim, I suppose, like, in Skyrim also. There's smithing and things.
Enchanting, smithing, and alchemy.
Do you bother? What's your favorite, if so? Now, here's the thing. I'm usually watching someone else play a game in the house, and that person does bother. Mm-hmm. Probably likes that part of these games more than anything else. If I were playing it, I would not.
Ah.
If I were playing the game myself, and this is why I'm not the one playing them, because the other person wants to do everything, and I would probably just do the main quest and not even worry about side quests, not worry about any of that stuff, and that just makes it more boring. So it's just more interesting if this other person plays, and that's why she's the one who plays. But yeah, she loves doing that stuff, loves doing it almost more than anything else, and it doesn't bore me to watch her do it. But I think it would bore her if all I did was just, you know, go right through the main plot and finish the game and not even care about anything else. So I can't explain to you why she likes it so much, but she just does. I mean, that's one of the reasons we pick some of the games we pick, is because it's got little things like that in there that she likes to do. I have no idea why, but we're both entertained by watching her do it. So, and as far as a favorite... I would have to think of what her favorite is, I suppose, to name anything. And I think she really liked, I think it would be Skyrim. In New Vegas, you could, make ammo and stuff?
Yeah.
Was it New Vegas, or was it something else?
No, New Vegas had workbenches, and you could make things if you had recipes.
Okay, well, that's an example of something she never did at all, which is weird, because, again, she loves that stuff.
They also had survival, which was basically cooking up things.
Yeah, she kind of liked to do that, but she even did that a lot less than you would think that she would based on other things she does. Yeah. So Skyrim is probably going to be the one... I could even name, in Baldur's Gate and in Champions of Norrath, you know, where you could put jewels in weapons and stuff. She loved that.
The customization stuff, yeah.
And I think there was even a little bit... Could you do that kind of stuff in Diablo 3 a little?
I haven't played Diablo 3, but I would be very shocked if you could not.
Well, you could change the color of your costume, and she loved that, going and buying different dyes and mixing and matching the colors and stuff. And there were even achievements for having an outfit that used every single...
Nice.
Of a certain category. She loved that. But I think that probably her favorite thing was in Skyrim, and it was probably it had to be is alchemy, or
there's smithing, alchemy, and
the one you do with herbs and stuff.
That's alchemy.
Okay, that has to be
her smithing, and then enchanting.
Yeah, the alchemy has to be the top. The smithing would probably be a close second, with enchanting being a third, but sometimes it might be competition for a second, depending on how she's feeling. Because she did like enchanting things a lot, but that was the last thing she kind of really leveled up in. Mm. She loved just gathering stuff for the alchemy stuff, and she liked the smithing. I mean, I think sometimes smithing, depending on her mood, might even compete for first. But that's probably, if she had to put them in ranks, it would be alchemy, smithing, and enchantment is probably how she would put it. And she probably liked that better in Skyrim than other things like New Vegas or anything else. So, there. That's more of an answer, probably, than you expected you'd get from me on that question.
Right. Did you have dark chocolate before tonight?
Not only, I had it on an empty stomach. So
Williams hopped up on William crack.
Yeah, sorry.
That would explain it.
Sorry. When I have a whole chocolate bar.
Will versus chocolate.
And I don't have anything else to eat, it really.
Will 0, chocolate 1.
Okay, go ahead. Say what you were...
I'm largely similar to her. I love that stuff. I loved all the different crafting things in World of Warcraft. I spent a lot of time in the workbench in all the Fallout games. I didn't particularly do survival, and I didn't do cooking hardly in Skyrim. I tried it, but then I didn't. But I was obsessed with smithing, and later also obsessed with alchemy and enchanting. And of course, alchemy and enchanting together are how I got my godlike powers. I think there are two conditions of which one must be met in order for me to be into it. One, it has to actually matter, which is what throws out, for example, cooking in Skyrim. There are all sorts of recipes where you gather ingredients and you can make things that will give you, if you eat them, maybe 5 hit points.
Yeah.
And they cost like 3 pounds of weight to carry around.
Yeah.
And I've got, well, nowadays I've got 1 billion hit points, but literally 1 billion, I believe 1.8 billion. But even back in the day, I had like 200 or something. So 5 hit points was stupid. And it automatically regenerates anyway. So I'm like, why would I spend time on this? And to a certain degree, for me, survival in Fallout New Vegas was very similar. There were some high-end things in there that were cooler. But in general, not so much. The other crafting in Fallout New Vegas, to me, was better. So it has to either matter or be heavily cosmetic. If I can make things that, you know, decorate my house or change my clothes or make little insignificant pets that don't do anything but just follow me around and be cute or whatever, I am all over that shit. And I always have, and in general it's the customization stuff. I also like the ones where you fuse together weapons to make new weapons, or where you breed animals to make new monsters for you to tame and stuff like that. I eat that shit up. I think it's at the heart of why I enjoyed in MMOs and why I don't play MMOs anymore. It gives you a real sense of accomplishment. It's a completely fake accomplishment, but it gives you a very real sense of accomplishment.
Well, I don't think either of those things matter to the other adult in my house. I mean, they help. Mm. But, like, I mean, I think she liked alchemy because it's just the whole idea of it, I guess, you know. And she'd be out looking around. Oh, there's this thing, you know. And then she'd go and she'd go to the little table and she'd make the little potion. And most of the time she'd sell it. She didn't even use these potions.
Oh,
she
I would did just, that. I've made some really powerful potions of something stupid, I don't even remember what, but they're worth millions, so I just, anytime I go shopping, I just, at the end, I sell one of those so I can guarantee I get all the money.
Yeah.
Recently, because I'm still playing Skyrim, I've got myself to the point where I can eat an alchemical ingredient and know all of its properties by that.
Oh, yeah.
And so, recently, because I'm now into the DLC stuff, I'm actually encountering new stuff I haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm eating the first one to check it out. And I recently ate, and this had never come up before for some reason, one of its properties was that it could be worked in a paralysis potion. Now, as you may recall, this is true of most of the Elder Scrolls games, when you eat the stuff and unlock the things, it actually affects you. So if you eat something, it's like, oh, this poisons people. Like, as soon as you're out of the menu, you're actually poisoned for a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So I ate this paralysis thing, I come out of the menu, I'm just frozen and fall over. And for 10 seconds or so, I'm just watching my lifeless body on the ground. And then I got back up. And it was all fine.
Yeah, I think it's a genuine role-playing thing for her. I mean, she just feels like, hey, I'm doing this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's... But
I really got into it in World of Warcraft. Some of my characters, and it didn't really... Some of the earlier MMOs, supposedly, you could actually play the game where basically your crafting was your whole point of the game.
Mm.
It became very by the numbers in World of Warcraft, so that didn't really work. But I got into ones where, like, the weaving, the tailoring, was way more exciting to me than the fact that I could cast spells and go into dungeons and kill monsters.
Yeah.
I would just, like, and then I would, like, try and sell stuff and make money and try and sort of do a business that way. And I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she would, too. I think that would be right up her alley.
In Skyrim, for some reason, I was way more into the smithing. Like, I knew I was going to do all three, because I always would. But right off the bat, I just would smith way lots. And I was way into that. Eventually, I got to where I could make everything, so now I don't care anymore.
Well, the reason the smithing, I mean, that's why I don't think it mattered to her so much about any kind of, like you said, cosmetic or any other kind of meaningful result, because smithing really gives you that, because you have this thing. Like an armor, you can put the armor on and look, see what it looks like or whatever. But I mean, the alchemy thing, unless you're going to be using potions a lot, it's just, you're just making potions.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're probably selling them. So, no, it was just, like I say, I think it was just their whole role-playing angle. Like, you know, I'm really gathering herbs. I'm really putting them in a little mortar and pestle and grinding them up and making a potion.
Chasing butterflies.
Yeah, I mean.
To rip off their wings.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this, you know, it just seemed like, like you said, she would be one of those people that if a game allowed you to be just a crafter and have a store, she would probably prefer doing
and
that.
Supposedly, I think, like, the
other
original,
than adventuring.
The original EverQuest, maybe you could kind of do that and stuff. Eventually, they made them all more sort of even, and so that was less of a thing. But I think back in the day, that was a bit. But I don't know. I don't play them anymore. So, yeah, that's that. Good night.
Good night.
This one appears to be anonymous. Superheroes are popular. But have they jumped the shark yet? And what genre do you think will replace them?
Well, I do think that I think Marvel has done a great job of finally bringing the superhero genre into a place where, you know, you're making movies and TV shows, and it's probably more mainstream than it's ever been now.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Thanks to, you know, Marvel's really accomplished that. And they've done it by doing things that, you know, a lot of people on the DC side insist that, well, you can't do that, you know. It's like that meme that's been floating around where, you know, there's a picture of Wonder Woman and it says DC struggles with, you know, they're not sure that the world's ready for a Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
And then on the bottom, it's there's a picture of that raccoon. And Marvel says, here's a talking raccoon. You know, it's like Marvel gets it. You can do these things. DC's just making a whole bunch of stupid excuses.
Yeah.
That said,
although Black Widow's still not getting her own goddamn movie.
No, I get that, but
hi, Ezzy.
Marvel's not doing everything right, but at least they're willing to do things that DC claims can't be done, and Marvel keeps proving, yeah, it can. All of that said, I do think that we're talking about popular culture here. They're not going to be okay with superhero movies forever. Eventually, this is going to run out of steam.
I don't know in the grand scheme what we're going to switch to. I do have a theory that eventually we're going to swerve over, which it's sort of a variant on superhero in some ways, but I think we're going to swerve more into urban fantasy. Right now, we're only doing that largely with young adult films, but I think it's becoming a pretty big genre, and so I think that's going to be a thing.
Well, I have to agree with you on that.
I
mean, well, let me just put it this way. I can't think of anything. I mean, that seems more plausible than anything else.
Yeah.
Or as plausible. You know, you could say, well, maybe some regular science fiction will sort of get the spotlight for a while, because it's kind of struggling when you think about it.
Late 70s, early 80s was that phase.
But you don't think it can swing back that direction?
It can. I just think it might be a little early. I mean, they still exist. None of these genres ever really
go
away.
No, that's right. But I think an argument can be made that superhero movies are kind of dominating things now.
Yes.
I think I like your idea about urban fantasy, because it's never done that yet. I mean, it's not really ascended to a
big... Every once in a while it tries and does it not so well.
Yeah, right.
Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Well, you could kind of argue that Harry Potter sort of played with that
and other
idea.
And Constantine.
Although, as you pointed out, that's still young adult.
Yeah. Constantine was an attempt and did not do so well. Sorcerer's Apprentice was an attempt and did not do so well. On the smaller screen, they actually did a Dresden Files TV show that did not do so well.
Even though I liked it. But you didn't like it.
All right, are you
Harry,
coming?
Have you never had pizza, pizza, pizza?
Are you coming back?
No, I'm gone for the weekend.
Well, are you coming back soon?
Probably not.
Well, I don't know what you're doing, so.
Oh, I thought you were there when we talked about it.
No, you were over there. I didn't hear you over the mountain.
We're going to Kohl's.
Uh-huh.
Because Marcia needs shorts, but considering all my pants are falling off, we might do that while we're there. And then we're going to Costco to get candy to throw during the parade, but we're taking the smalls with us, so God only knows what's going to happen.
I'll see you tomorrow.
I love you.
I love you too. But yeah, I would like some good urban fantasy, and there are attempts made, but
That's not young adult.
Yeah, I'm sick of young adult shit.
Yeah,
because I hate teenagers.
No, I think you're probably right.
But I feel like that's only a pseudo shift, because that's just sort of a variant on superhero in some ways.
I don't know.
I don't know what the next real big thing is. It probably hasn't really happened yet. Postmodern. I don't know what. or just movies about guys getting kicked in the balls.
Well, the thing is, superhero movies, I mean, I do think it's probably going to run out of steam, because everything does, but it might take a long time.
Yep.
I think,
especially because they're going to keep rebooting everything.
Well, but also, there is some, I mean, you know, this is something else I'm realizing more and more. I don't think... It's taken time for me to really appreciate just what 9/11 has meant to other people aside from me.
Wow. Did not see this coming.
You know, it's been slowly sinking in. I mean, of course, it affected me, obviously, like it affected everybody personally, and I've spent a lot of time trying to process my own feelings about it, because, you know, that's all a person can do. But you know, seeing how it's affecting everybody else has been a really gradual process. Like, for example, several years ago, I mean, this was not long after it happened, but longer than most people might expect. Maybe 5 years, even. No, three, maybe. I saw Dennis Miller on...
Oh, Jesus.
Something. And...
Oh, fucking A.
And I remember thinking... Boy, this guy looks like Dennis Miller, and he sounds like Dennis Miller, and he's got that smarmy, using big words kind of thing like Dennis Miller, but this cannot be Dennis Miller.
9/11 fucked up a lot of guys named Miller, because Frank Miller also went crazy after 9/11.
And, you know, I don't think that I would be speaking out of turn to say that my family back home, over the years, I've noticed some very specific changes.
You have made reference to that. I don't remember if you've done it on the air.
Well, I mean, I think they would agree. I mean, you know, they would say, well, you know, 9/11 caused this, you know,
caused
direction.
Obama to be a Muslim.
No. It caused this direction to be taken in their thinking. And of course, like everybody who says that, they feel justified in that. And I'm not going to dispute it or say anything about it. At least not on the air, but I didn't take that direction in my own thinking, is the point I'm making here. And, you know, I think a lot of things I could say about the effect of 9/11 on culture, most people would go, duh, and they would have said that within the first year or two, because for some reason I was not, again, I was processing my own feelings about it, and then, you know, I had three small children that I was trying to help negotiate the post 9/11 world too.
And insofar as it was possible in the U.S., we were as far away from it as we could have been.
Well, right, and I didn't look at Dennis Miller as some kind of canary in the coal miners. You know, like this is an indication of where everybody's going. You know,
yeah.
Dennis Miller has made this change. You know, my family has made this change. I didn't,
Frank Miller.
I didn't really think of it as
got really fucking racist after 9/11.
But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the superhero stuff we're seeing in its popularity, it's not just due to the fact that the technology's kind of caught up, and now you can make a movie that looks cool, you know, that people who aren't geeks might think is really fun to watch. I think the effects of that day and kind of the paranoia, or I don't know what words to use here to describe it, but I think it's still with us, and I think
the victimization, I think, is a good way to do it. I think that's what it is. I think that for the first time made a lot of Americans realize that America could be the victim in their mind, and the superhero movies are a response to that, because essentially it's a great what-if scenario, because frequently whatever the trauma happening in the superhero movie is not dissimilar to a situation like a terrorist attack on the towers, but now we have a superhero to save us.
Well, that's what it seems like to me.
In the same way that Superman quickly sort of became a response to communism, I think.
Right, but at the same time, you know, comic book characters in the mid-80s, like, you know, after the so-called Bronze Age, you know, they got to be kind of surly and gloomy and
oh, yeah. Because we were full of ourselves then, so then we could explore our own darker recesses.
Okay, but
I was just a boy.
Well, but that's still going on,
to an
annoying extent, in my opinion. I mean, this is something that, like, DC can't let go of it. I mean, Marvel can have Captain America, you know, gung-ho from the 40s and everything, and where Captain America is even saying to Tony Stark, of all people, well, yeah, maybe don't you think that costume I wear is a little bit, you know, old-fashioned or whatever? And Tony Stark, of all people, says, well, maybe that's what people want and need right now. And yet, the one character in all of superhero-dom who you can do that with and maybe inspire people with is Superman, and they can't be bothered to make a Superman movie like that.
Well, and they also keep trading them around. DC's comic efforts are not under one person's group.
No, Kevin, I get that.
Kevin Feige is running Marvel's
media right now. I get that, but Marvel can do that with Captain... And even look at Thor. I mean, he's all noble and speaking in weird, archaic English. And Marvel gets by with it. And you know, two Thor movies that are, you know, neither one of them was that great, but they're still making money and people like them. But DC can't make, you know, they can't summon that same thing with, say, Shazam or Superman because, oh, that's too old-fashioned. No one's going to like that. Well, everybody wants these cynical dark heroes. No, that's not true.
No, and DC's also really schizoid right now. They just can't. They're giving it to fucking people. I mean, Bryan Singer lost his mind, and then they're giving it to goddamn Zack Snyder. I mean, it's just they can't make up their mind. Marvel, no matter how the next Marvel movie does, the rest of their plans are going ahead. They might adjust, but they've got a vision going through to goddamn 2028. And if one movie sucks, they're like, okay, we got to tweak. But they don't suddenly say, let's change all the producers and directors and go in a completely different direction.
No, that's right.
And throw in a new superhero.
Neil Adams was being interviewed on Fat Man on Batman or whatever. And he pointed out that... like, Marvel's doing Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, which I'm kind of excited about.
Neil Adams pointed out that this is, like, this isn't even a B rate, bro. This is, like, C or D.
Yeah, no, this is some old,
and the original,
fucked up shit.
His opinion was the original book wasn't that great. He liked the people who worked on it, but it wasn't that great. And so the way he explained why Marvel's doing this stuff is because... some time ago, I guess, Stan Lee, as a money-making scheme, you know, sold licenses to a whole bunch of other people. So in a way, Marvel doesn't even own, like, Spider-Man or any of these properties.
So they're grabbing what they can.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah. They're grabbing what they can, and it's turning out to be a brilliant strategy. Whereas Adams was saying that DC has the burden of owning these properties. They have to do it, well, and
they're
do it right.
Themselves out. And honestly, Nolan didn't help it, because Nolan created something really cool and really unique to him that you cannot duplicate anywhere else.
Right.
So they're just psyching themselves out. They're choking.
Yeah. Well, and plus, I keep saying this, and I don't know why I haven't heard anyone else say it, because it seems to me this is the biggest deal. DC has Warner Brothers, and that's it. Marvel can work with just about anybody, and have.
Well, and yeah.
And if you've only got one studio you can work with, I think that's very limiting.
Well, and it didn't, honestly, it didn't hurt Marvel that Skynet bought them, by which I mean Disney/ABC.
No, that's right.
/everything.
That's absolutely correct. So yeah, I mean, it's just like you said, they're choking, and all.
But
and
I think credit goes to Kevin Feige. They've got one guy who is at the top of this, who is ultimately making all the decisions.
Yeah, kind of coordinating it.
And knows what the fuck
he's
doing.
Yeah.
I don't believe DC has one of those.
No, probably not.
At least in terms of their movie stuff. Like, Legendary is nice, but no, they don't.
I gotcha.
We're way over time, so.
Sorry.
Tell us your thoughts on 9/11. Oh, my God. Don't do that. I don't want to hear that. Read that. Whatever. Tell us your thought on William's latest thoughts on superheroes and other things. I don't know. You come up with them. On the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and go look at us on YouTube. Go to Facebook and like The Magical Talking Hat, which just yesterday got its first new like in a long time.
Wow.
So we're up to 41. Also follow me on Twitter for no good reason, at NotQuiteTony. And tune in next week when I have absolutely no idea, but something will happen. We'll be here.
Yep.
Who did the boy? I'm starting to sound more and more like Stallone when I do it.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.